You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, crap, dead air.
I knew there's a hell of a cheap there somewhere.
That's another Thursday night, and this is, of course, The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio with Bob Brill.
Yes, sir.
Sitting there with a smile on his face and no tequila. With Jerry Christina over here in the far left.
With no tequila.
Far right.
Far
no
left.
Tequila.
Far left for me.
Yeah. And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell in on phone in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I'm here.
Hey, what be happening?
I'm still reading this book, and oh my gosh, I just got to like a page I can't believe what I'm reading.
Oh, well, we'll get to that in just a second.
Yes,
but right now, let's take pause to talk about Creative Edge. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet clients' goals. We're actually known as, probably from Canada, we're an international outlet, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Okay, then. Creative Edge, your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson, president, and thank you, Mickey. You came through like a champion, and we'll let you know why in just a few minutes. Okay. Bobby Jean, would you like to read your own ad?
Oh, my gosh. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, fine.
You can't talk about your own business?
But, you know, if you want me to.
Nah, I'll get it. Outlet Shop is your online source for top brands. I swear. She moves to Albuquerque and she starts wearing a hat and says, "Who farted?" Okay, Outlet Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rock Mountain Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com. Enter code WB100, that stands for, of course, Writer's Block, and receive $10 off on your order, or you can call them toll free at 877-340-9378, and of course you will get Bobby Jean Bell or her wonderful husband Jim, who I'm sure is listening in on the other phone. Okay. Well, we had a faux pas this week, and the bookie worked her butt off on Monday as she ran in my office, and she goes, "Stop reading the book." And I was really enjoying the book from whatever her name was that was going to be this week's guest. And she goes, "Oh, she can't make it." Told her publicist however long ago she couldn't make it, and nobody got back to us and told us, so we, of course, called Mickey Mickelson over at Creative Edge, and he fixed it up for us. Yeah, Mickey Mickelson is like a magician.
And we made a new friend.
And we did. We made a new friend, and he's on the phone with us tonight. And he is just, he's a really good guy. And for those of you who listen to The Writer's Block, which there's over 500,000 of you now, Tony Phillips has written for print and online periodicals for more than a quarter century, building a readership that has come to expect a note of sarcasm and critique from him, regardless of the genre, media, or subject matter. Tony is a former weekly columnist in San Diego City Beat and has authored nonfiction and fiction works, including novels, short stories, and commentaries and poetry. We got to talk about that. His books in print include the 2017 novel The Fires of Orc, which we'll be discussing tonight, and 2016's How He Won, What Happens Now, and What to Do Next. I got to buy that book. Okay, a technical and strategic analysis of the Trump presidential campaign's path to victory. He studied philosophy at San Diego State and California State University, Long Beach. He was a faculty member at China's Hunan First Normal University. Is there an abnormal university in Hunan? I would like to know. And has taught young and adult and professional students at institutions in Mexico, Korea, and the United States. He truly is an international teacher and man about town. Aha. His literary passion is American modernism. He is inspired by the works of mid-century authors like John Steinbeck and Thomas Wolfe, as well as contemporary authors including Cormac McCarthy and Tom Robbins. He writes in multiple genres with a passion for crossover stories that blend the best of subgenres with American traditional literary fiction. Okay, I'm not going to go any further than that because, Tony, you're going to be on your own here in just a minute. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. Tony Phillips. And yet, here you are.
Yeah, Jim, that couldn't possibly have been a more grandiose introduction. All I do is write stories.
Well, you know what? You know what, Tony? That's why we have you write your own bio, because we read it.
If I'd have known I was going to be taken seriously, I might have tried to sound a bit more modest.
Well, we figured out that you probably lied through half of it.
Yeah.
But the deal is, see, your friends know. And they all laugh and point. I mean, I can too. Ha ha! They're laugh and point. There you go.
And inside every author is a publicist trying to get out, right?
Right. Absolutely. But in our conversation the other night, Tony informed me. He said to me, "He goes, he is horrible. Horrible. What did you tell me, Tony? You were horrible at self promotion.
That's absolutely right. I am probably the worst promoter in the world. I had no capacity for this at all.
Well, you're on the radio now, so you're going to have to do some promoting.
Okay, well, let me start with, I was thinking of titling the novel A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius, but some other arrogant author beat it to it. And so, what you've got is The Fires of War.
Well,
and I'd like to, you know...
there's nothing the matter with that.
No, and... My family are listening, as a matter of fact. I just left my mother and my Aunt Jan, the latter of whom is visiting from Houston. Mother's 80-some, and Aunt Jan's not far behind her. And, you know, if you do need humility in your life, get a couple of old related family members around.
I used to have a bunch, but, you know, they're dropping like flies now, so.
You're right.
I think I was 46 the last time my Aunt Jan hit me with a wooden spoon.
My mother still hits me, and she's been dead for what? I don't know how many. 8 years.
You probably deserve it.
Oh, you're right there. You're right there. So The Fires of Ork, it kind of like takes a life. It kind of like mirrors what's happening now, does it not?
Well, it kind of does. And that was accidental, to tell you the truth. Back in 2014, when I conceived of the idea, I was writing considerable op-ed at the time, mostly with political slant. And I looked at, you know, this perverse electoral system that we live with as Americans and all of the quirks and oddities that have resulted in minority-majority elections, winning one vote and losing another and what have you. And I thought to myself, what if the right renegade candidate were to jump in the race and just machine the system so that he could win the right pockets of votes scattered throughout the country and ignore the populace as a whole, then you could emerge with a victory out of a scheme like that. By the time I went to press January of 2017, somebody had beaten me to that by a couple of months. And you know, what's passed is what, prologue or terrifying, or whatever the case would be.
You know,
can I jump in here?
Absolutely.
Is that okay? Hi, Tony. This is Bobby.
Calling
in on the phone like you are. We got the book on very short notice, as Jim was explaining. We always love to be able to have, you know, read the book, and you were so kind to understand that we wouldn't necessarily have been able to do that. But... just as Jim was calling me tonight, I was in the book on Inauguration Day. this is, my goodness, you're quite a writer. There is so much, the narrator character that's really telling the story. You really get us in his mind, and he is a deep thinker. Tell us a little bit about the narrator, and also, what is Orc? I know William Blake talks about Orc. Tell us a little bit about the title and maybe a little bit about the narrator character.
Taking them in order, that's actually a direct lift from William Blake's poem of the late 18th century, early 19th, America, A Prophecy, in which the line that actually ends up being misquoted in one of my favorite films, Blade Runner from 1982, that mentions the angels burning with the fires of Orc. And we're talking here in this novel, the narrator is recalling an election that preceded the calamitous events that result in the dystopian time that he now lives. And it seemed to me quite an homage, quite fittingly, to Blake, to say some of the prophecy he could not have foreseen is what wicked times we live in now as Americans, and what days may come. They kind of give me pause. But that's it. But the narrator's perspective really is one of being a survivor of a time before the fall of civilization, and now living in the afterworld, lives with what could have been, what should have been, and to a certain extent, what does he choose to share with humanity as it seeks to reestablish itself, and how do we avoid making the mistakes of the past?
It was interesting. Each chapter starts with a quote that you use to kind of set up the chapter, and they're by all different types of writers. How did you choose what to open each chapter with?
Aspiration. I thought, who do I admire most as thinkers on a subject, and what might they have said better than I could ever say on my own? I dug deep. I mean, there's Kierkegaard in there. I've got, and also some rather sinister folks. I think I quote Stalin in one part.
Mm-hmm.
But as a matter of fact, I think in Stalin's case, the quote is that, those who cast the votes decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything.
Yeah, I just read that chapter.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, probably no more accurate or pithy observation on the reality of
I have just one more question along this same line. The narrator sits with a copy of Ulysses, I think it is, and he makes references throughout this day that he's sharing the story about how he has so much to read. And I wondered, why did you choose for him to have that particular book? There has to be a reason.
There is. You're the first and only person to ask me that question, and I'm so glad you did. I believe there are two types of people in the world, those who have read Ulysses and those who care about their lives. And listen, Joyce is a giant.
And yet
if you can make sense of that work, you're ahead of me as a lit critic. I tell you what, it's 1,000 pages of difficult, and I have done it. And so, I that's a notch on my belt as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anyone cannot be somewhat autobiographical in fiction. It's all just hypothetical self-story, right? So there's a bit of me there. I'm quite proud of having read Ulysses.
Well, Bobby, you stole my question. I'm literally sitting here with notes in front of me.
He is.
Asking about.
He is.
Getting ready to ask him about the quotes at the beginning of the chapter. And point on that, too. You quote two of my favorite all-time people in the history of the world who are total opposites to each other, Niccolo Machiavelli and Rudyard Kipling. And I too was kind of curious how you chose specifics, because even you mentioned Stalin. You know, there's always, for a writer, if you're going to quote somebody, you always have this thing that says, who am I going to turn off if I quote Hitler, if I quote Stalin, if I, to a lesser extent, quote Machiavelli? Did that run through your mind when you did that?
Well,
He's lost in
John
Lewis. He's lost in an Escondido Canyon.
No, can you hear me? I'm
yeah.
with you.
Now we can. Yeah, we lost you for a second.
Were you talking to the police?
I should share with all half million listeners out there that I'm one of those guys you don't want to share a freeway with. I'm doing the most Southern California I've ever done. I'm actually doing a radio broadcast while hurtling south on Interstate 15.
Well, good for you. Can you knit me a hat while you're at it?
You know, it's one thing to be heedless of your own welfare, but you know, there are plenty of drivers around me who probably don't want to know what I'm doing.
That's very true. All right, Bob, you're probably going to have to ask your question again.
Do you need me to repeat the question?
If you wouldn't mind, Bob.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Bobby.
I can't hear Bob at all, so I'd love to hear the question again.
Well, I don't know why you can't hear him. I've got his gain all the way up.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, I will go ahead and do that. Basically, you picked some very specific people as in the quotes, and
Bob for some reason.
I don't know what's going on. You're all the way up. I can't put you up any higher.
Go ahead now and see if there maybe is a problem with the microphone.
Oh, could be. Oh, he was going to ask you about the quotes that certain people don't. You know, it's always a question about whether you're going to offend somebody if you quote Stalin or you quote Hitler, you know, or even Machiavelli at that matter. Because you know, did you think about that, or was that an issue when you were doing the quotes at the top of each chapter?
I think quite often about whether or not I might have been a readership, and not just in this particular book, but you know, I've written opinion editorial and commentary for decades, and because I'm not ideologically beholden to either camp, by this point in time, I should have literally offended every human being alive, and yet people keep reading. So you know, I almost think in my own work, if it's on the edge of offensive, it means I'm doing what I want to do.
Aha. Now, Bob, try your mic right now.
How about that? Do you hear me good?
I can hear you, but
okay, maybe.
I don't know if Bobby can hear you.
Bobby, can you hear me?
Very faintly.
Interesting.
It's better.
Okay. Well, let me throw in another question then. You know, as a magazine writer, you know, or if you're writing news or whatever, you got to keep it within a certain word count. You can't kind of get as flowery or descriptive as you like to. But I know in right from the get-go in the Orc book, it's super, super descriptive as well as getting on. Is that something that you kind of... I want to say, felt okay. I could do this now. Let me get going on the descriptive and the flowery, and just get a whole bunch of stuff in there that I can't do on a normal basis.
Oh God, yes. I found 100,000 words to be so liberating because as writing journalists wing work, you know, you do get called on the purple prose. You just can't. Not only is there not room, but it's not even appropriate to the form all the time. And so, there's a bit of a frustrated prose artist that lives probably in every magazine writer. And it was so refreshing to just be able to go ahead. And having said that, I don't self-censor terribly well. And so... You do have to have a meter running for, is this just link for link's sake? You know, you don't want to get so self-indulgent that you're wrapped up in your own craft.
When you got into your second book, you, as you mentioned earlier, being much more political, did you ever foresee a conversation like Sarah Huckabee Sanders had with Jim Acosta today about the enemy of the people being us reporters?
God, you know what? I watched that mouth agape, and every time I think we've reached some nadir beneath which we can't sink, it's something else. And for her to be able to deny, you know, to just say, no, I don't believe that a free press is the enemy of a free people is horrifying. I say this, I've had editors have to rein me in. Prior to the election, I referred to the current president as a bloated carnival barker who cannot pay his bills and still bankrupt a casino. And the editors at a certain national publication thought that was beyond the pale. So they dialed that one back. Now, half-wit in chief, I've gotten away with. So, you just don't know, really, and how far can you go? But it is nice as a book author not to feel as though I have the same standard of objectivity that has to be maintained. Some answer to your question, though, Jim, is I can't believe, honestly, it's incredulous that we live in this country in this century and a free press is labeled the enemy of a people. It's unbelievable.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. As a matter of fact, the question we asked on a show just before this, KWTF Radio, was the fact that do they not consider Fox News media? And if they do, is Fox News also enemy of the people?
I guess that does kind of, I mean, that's more than just a semantic question.
It really surely is more than a semantic question.
I mean, what do we mean by reportage? Because we see less and less of it all the time. Dan Rather said shortly following the O.J. Simpson extravaganza that he was at the time the editor-in-chief at CBS, and he said, I grew up with the Cronkite. I'm accustomed to hard news.
Yeah, me too.
My gut instinct was, we should not even be covering this. This isn't news. But if you don't cover it, every television in the country will be turned to a channel that is covering it. So what do you do? And it's really hard, I think, for the tellers of hard news to stick to what matters anymore.
Well, I was having that discussion the other day with someone who was asking about what legitimate news sources, and I consider legitimate news sources local radio, local newspapers, magazines, wire services. I used to work for one. And we talked about the fact that, okay, normally we wouldn't cover a lot of what gets covered. But unfortunately, because of social media and online news services, what you have is you have those people going over and above covering news in an entertaining sort of way and then getting out of hand to the point where all of a sudden legitimate news sources can't ignore it anymore.
Right. Right. So such that, if one of the major networks or the New York Times, say, decided we're not going to repeat the president's 3 a.m. throne sitting tweet bursts. Well, you can't not because those are what's driving the public discourse. And, and as terrifying as that is, people kind of get the government they deserve. If that's what our attention span is, if that's our capacity to consume information, it's just what's contained in 170 characters, ill-written and unpunctuated, then, do we deserve a free press?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's how this president chooses to communicate. So if you don't cover it, I don't know. I don't know what's the alternative.
Well, and here's the consequence of that, Jim. Quoting myself from an earlier work before, as bad form as that is, despite everything wrong with this person as an individual, as an aberration of nature and everything else, no human on earth ever has received the total amount of publicity that Donald J. Trump has gotten in 2 years. I mean, not the Beatles, not Elvis, not JFK, not Alexander the Great, not all put together. He is 24 hours, all channels,
yep,
all about Trump.
Yep.
And if that's your goal, nobody's better at it than he.
No.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Well, you also have to remember that Alexander the Great conquered the known world. He never got a dinner.
Except for our media. He never conquered our media, believe it or not. For all of our friends in Glendale.
I mean, Trump gets a dinner. Alexander the Great never got a dinner.
No, but probably never had to sit through a roast either.
Well, he probably roasted a few, though. Hey, I'm going to take a few minutes here. I'm going to take actually less than a minute. I'm going to do one real quick commercial. I'm going to be back to you in just a second, so don't go away.
Can't wait.
Are you good? You're good?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
All righty. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? Well, it is, for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Well, we all know it was the dog. Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. And, of course, Russ and Karen will thank you. And All Dogs Rule will thank you. And I'll thank you. So there it is. Okay, it is 7:25. We are on the air with, I don't know, what's his name? Tony Phillips. Sorry, Tony.
Captain Phillips.
There's
right?
been so much going on today. if you want to call and talk to Tony, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. So, where were we? What were we to, who were we downgrading and degrading as we were went to commercial? I don't remember. Anyway.
Bobby had a question, right, Bobby?
Bobby had a question. I'm sure she did.
Bobby?
Nope. Oh.
Fascinating.
Okay.
You have a question, right, Bobby?
You have a question?
No. I guess my only question might be, was there anything that you did have to edit out of the book, or did you, is it all there?
there's not any substance that was cut. However, there's a significant bit of the entire story that was rewritten, and it was so because one of my first readers was my wife, who happens to be the best literary critic I know, and her input was, "You don't write women very well." And I thought that it took me 2 minutes to not be offended, and then another 20 minutes to not act offended.
Well, when I was told that, it took me a lot longer to not be to get over being offended. But that's okay. Go ahead.
it was a fair and very constructive insight that, you know, you're writing about, Tony, a female character who's an object that you want female characters to be, and not only is that insulting, it's also just completely inauthentic. And I think absolutely improved the story for me to say, you know, a really empowered woman isn't the kind of a man that's a male stereotype. And so that's one thing for absolute certain that got rewritten, and I think ended up improving it a great deal.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about Lydia's character?
I am talking about Lydia's character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really liked her, yeah.
Well, thank my wife for that. She's a better writer than I, apparently.
Oh, I don't know who Lydia is.
That's okay. The book is full of surprises, especially the last... From the inauguration on, I will finish this book tonight because I have to know what happens next.
Thank you, Bobby. Okay.
Well, you know what? Let's talk a little bit about your process, because it's that's an important part of this show, and it's what our some of most actually most of our listeners like to hear about is how you go about your writing, when you write. Do you give yourself X amount of time to write, or do you just catch-as-catch-can write?
Well, I write just about all the time, and I do this. I do so for a living as well as for my own self. In addition to authorship and journalism work that I do, I write government contracts and grant proposals during the workday, which is pretty close to tossing word salad often. 10,000 word term papers on poverty over and over and over. And so I would say I write several thousand words a day, either by necessity or desire. And no, I this is one of those questions that serious writers should answer seriously, but I'm telling you the truth. For me, all that, I need to have the right space with the right oil lamp at the right corner of my desk and fingerless gloves on a winter's night in my little attic studio while I toil away thankless. That's romantic crap. No, the muse doesn't strike half the time. You just have to do it, and if it starts out bad, keep doing it until you get all the bad out of you, and eventually you'll have some good. And if nothing else, you can throw all the bad stuff away.
That's
my process.
That's good.
It's haphazard. It's extemporaneous. It's spontaneous, and it's often organized no better than the third world country.
So you keep it fun.
I try to.
There you go.
I try to.
Okay, now the big question: Do you find it hard to separate your grant writing from your article writing to your novel writing? Do you find it hard to turn the switch off and on either one?
In both directions, I find it difficult. On the one hand, I find it difficult to keep out of prose writing the sort of preachiness that I would typically have in a grant or appeal on behalf of some cause. And in the other direction, I find it hard to keep out of my technical writing the want to wax literary that I'll do on the other side. And so, yeah, I mean, the one can easily contaminate the other. Mm-hmm. In small doses, I think that makes them both better.
Sure.
But you'd be very careful, you know, in switching gears.
Which brings up the question of poetry, because you're a poet as well. And poetry is something I've never been able to master. I don't think a lot of people can. You kind of have to have something in you that says you're the heart of the poet, and I'm kind of interested in your perspective on that.
You know, as a poet, I am to poetry as your 17-year-old is to a rock musician. I have the desire and inclination and quite a bit less talent than those people I consider actual poets worthy of the title. But I love it as a form because it forces minimalism. You know, you find yourself 9 words into a line and you're 5 words too long, and it makes you prize what is essential and appreciate the sound of the written voice in a way that you know, we can forget it in prose. I think to our chagrin, actually. I think that the right infusion of poetry in most prose just makes it so...
It's going by Miramar. You're going by Miramar, aren't you?
I'm standing in my backyard now. I've completely shifted venue. Oh, yeah, no, I've moved from freeway to off-ramp to suburbs, and I've settled in.
We just heard jets come over.
I was going to say, it just sounded like Tesla just launched a rocket.
California in traffic.
Oh, true. Yeah, absolutely. And had I been 3 hours earlier, I'd still be on the freeway.
Yeah, no kidding. Bobby, why don't you ask Tony the question?
I'm happy to. Tony, do you ever deal with writer's block? And if so, how do you get around it? And if you don't, what do you think about it?
I think it's absolutely real. You know, as the golfers, baseball players, and others, they get the yips. And we get the writer yips the same way, where, boy, if anybody's ever had it, they know it. It's very real. And it comes in two varieties. There are those little mini writer blocks that, you know, they're kind of like a case of the sniffles. And, you know, they maybe it's an hour or so to just fight your way through it. And they can come chronically. But then there's the real, the writer's block that's, you know, a case of TB. And it just, you know, the life-threatening, month-long writer's block, I must never write again type of thing. And Bobby, I'll ask you, what do you do about it? You know, I have survived it, and I found this. Sometimes when it happens, it's symptomatic of something else. You just need to take better care of yourself. Get some sleep, eat right, get some sun on your face, stop stressing out and maybe you'll find it goes away. But other than that, I don't know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think since we're talking about it, and I'm really not a writer, I'm the one of the three of us that's more of the reader. But hey, Bob, when we talked with you with the Lancer novels and such, I'm not sure we asked you. Why don't you answer that question quickly?
Yeah, you did. We did.
Okay.
Yeah, my thing is I never get it. And to me, it's a lack of focus. Something distracts you to the point where you're not on point anymore. And it's just, my thing is, and it's interesting because when he just mentioned the fact that hitters and ball players and run into these yips, and with them, you can always just turn around and take left-handed batting practice or left-handed golf swings if you're right-handed, and it'll bring you right back. And I think it's sort of the same thing with writing, is that you just lost your focus, and doing something else or getting away from it and coming back helps you get your focus, helps you to refocus and get back onto where you were.
There's probably real validity to that. And there's also, just thinking about it, listening to your recount it, I remember, well, we have a mutual friend, Richard Palinelli, who you all know.
Right.
Richard's extremely successful author, has dozens of successful titles out there, and he and I were on a show together recently when he recalled a story of a recent work that he had set out to be 100,000 words in length, just because he had said to himself, I think this one should be about 100,000 words. And at the 65,000 word mark, was finding that, well, but my story's done, and choking himself over the fact that he needed, until finally an editor said to him, why did it need to be a, no, it doesn't. You started out with a preconceived idea, and you're letting that be the target rather than telling the story. Mm-hmm. Tell the story until it's told, and how, it doesn't matter how long it is. Whether it's length or I want to make sure and get this in there, or some other external variable that can confound you because you're looking at the wrong goal.
I think you can always embellish the story, but to cut it way, way back like that is really difficult. Mm-hmm. So what are you working on now or next?
I have just finished actually a historical novel. It's historical / coming of age, a story set in West Texas in 1934 with a teenage boy as a protagonist and from his perspective. And I recently completed a translation, my first foray into that. I did a translation of Hesse's Siddhartha from German. I expect both of those to be in print within the next several months, and certainly the coming year. And I have a second novel in the works that if I say anything about it, I'll talk myself out of doing it. But I do have another. That, in addition to continuing to write for a couple of magazines that I work for every month, I write about issues and characters in the limb loss community. I'm an above knee amputee and have been the beneficiary of a lot of support from Challenged Athletes Foundation and other groups working for adaptive sports and active lifestyles for people with limb loss. And I write for a couple of magazines in that industry, and that's a real passion of mine as well.
Mm. Huh. I'm kind of interested in more on hearing more on that. What exactly did you write, fictional or non-fictional stories in the limb loss magazines?
I generally have done profiles and features of people doing extraordinary things despite limitation. And they're not always physical achievement. It's, about, I'm really proud of the fact that the Paralympian, the adaptive athlete, the non-traditional body as an accomplisher of great things is now gaining more notoriety. But, not everybody was a jock before they lost their legs. Some of the most remarkable things that people do after suffering limb loss are passions involving service or community volunteer work or just getting back to life. And so I've been able to cover 100 or so people in the past couple of years from all walks of life all over the world. It's been really rewarding.
It sounds like it. Well, here, let's give you this. I mean, I can't think of a more better recipient. Can you? No, I didn't think so.
Guys, I need some sound makers.
Well, see, I just go to our engineer and I say, Ronan, I need this or I need that. He gave me this one, too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So he's not just downloading apps that make a fart sound on your smartphone.
Oh, we have that one too.
He does that too. Don't put anything past him.
I have a whole panel here. Oh, look. I think we have a call in, and I believe I know who that might be. So hang tough, don't go away, Tony.
Not just downloading apps that make a fart sound.
Oh crap.
Oh, we have that one too.
Hello.
Hey. You know what? Hey. I think I just blew somebody out of the wall again. Crap. Hi, Henry.
Hi. How's it going, folks?
I think I have to call Henry. I'm going to call Tony back, so hang on. Don't go away.
I'll hang on.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. I don't know if I can. Oh, shoot. Crap.
Am I with you?
Oh. Hey, he's there.
Oh, Tony, you're here.
Good.
I think I hung up. And you're here, and Henry's here.
They must be on the phone.
I'm here, too.
Oh, well, good. You're all here.
Greetings.
Yes, hi, Henry.
Indeed. Yes, sir.
So what's going on? What's happening? What are you up to?
We're being heard live right now, and we aren't aware of it.
Well, no, we are. Everybody's aware of it. Tony, this is this is Henry Park. He's our
keep them clean.
He's our roving roving reporter.
You obviously read a lot. Who's your favorite writers to read?
Wait a minute. You can't hear us, can you?
It'd be so hard to limit. I mean, I've grown enormously fond of David Sedaris. I think he's got so much talent.
Hey, guys.
I've read everything Cormac McCarthy's ever written. Twice.
Guys, hello.
But I reread a lot of...
I hear you, Jim.
Well, I know you do, Henry. They can't hear me.
Major American author.
All right, let's do this. All right.
I think you have to cut them off.
I also read Old English. I mean, I've read Somerset Maugham.
Because
recently.
They're talking and think they're not on...
I know, they don't think I'm on...
Oh, God, Madame Bovary. You know?
Oh, crap.
Oh, yeah.
Old stuff.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Literature used to have to do so much more.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Film without, performance art available to a big audience.
Hello?
You had to do it in the story, and so Dickens could take 300,000 words.
Tony, Bobby, are you there?
Okay, here comes Ronan.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know, are you there, folks?
Yeah, we're here.
I get the resume call.
Hello.
Yeah.
I know Henry
hello,
Park
can you hear
is
me?
Calling in.
We can hear you, Henry.
Stay
they can't hear you.
Stay on,
phenomenal
Henry.
Interview
don't go anywhere.
With Wes Studi for True West Magazine that was really great. We always love to have
you.
Henry
who's that?
Tell us the latest on what's happening with the West in the media. But
well, as a matter of fact, there's a lot happening right now.
He was absolutely fantastic.
And then we need Bobby Jean. Wherever she is,
we're playing a little engineering here, guys.
We are.
If you can hear us, so hang tight.
Ronan is in here, and we're panicked.
Don't go anywhere.
Okay, we have lost everybody now.
I'm back.
Oh
good.
Okay.
Tony, you there?
Okay, Tony's here,
and
Henry should be here.
Henry?
No, 818. Okay.
Don't give out his number, Chip.
I shouldn't have given you a hard time about your technology, Jim.
Well, you probably shouldn't have. I mean, okay, Henry, are you here? Henry? Well, we've lost him. We lost Henry. But we got Tony.
We got Tony.
And we got Bobby.
Oh, there might
hello.
Be somebody there.
Okay, everybody's here.
All right.
Thank you, Ronan. Right. Hey, wait a minute. Here, this is for
it's
Ronan.
It's like Christmas in August.
Hello, Jane.
Okay.
Hello.
Tony, this is Henry Park.
Henry. Hi, Tony. How are you
nice
doing?
That was, I mean, good. I don't know right. what that cluster is going to sound like on the radio.
Good.
We're going to edit that out.
Yeah. Now, I must say, I was listening to something you said before that I have to take issue with when you were discussing... You know, whether the free press is the enemy of the people and describing certain people as a bloated carnival barker. As a former carnival barker, I really resented that.
Well, Henry, you still are kind of a carnival barker.
A listen, I apologize to the carnival barkers and used car salesmen and charlatans all over the world for an unfair comparison. This is a singular disaster, and it's wrong for me to compare him, even by simile, to anyone else.
It's okay. We don't take it too personally. But I ought to tell you what's happening in the exciting world of Westerns, because
okay.
A lot is happening.
All right, yeah. Go for
it. Good news for fans of Kevin Costner in general and Yellowstone in particular. Paramount TV is picking up the series for another season. Yellowstone is the highest rated new series to premiere this summer, broadcast or cable. Costner's next TV venture, The Highwayman, about the Texas Rangers who tracked down Bonnie and Clyde, is in the can and was originally announced for October, but Netflix has decided to push the show ahead to March of 2019. He co-stars with Woody Harrelson in that one. And good news for fans of the Coen brothers, who brought you the remake of True Grit and No Country for Old Men. Their upcoming Netflix Western anthology series, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, will premiere at the Venice Film Festival at the end of this month. And before you say who premieres a TV series at a film festival, they've cut the series into a movie, a 132-minute movie, and it'll be on Netflix before the end of the year. Not sure if it's going to be as a movie or a series. And great news for all you Deadheads. It's finally official. Deadwood rolls camera again in October.
Yay!
And I understand that. Yes, and I understand things are crazy at Melody Ranch now because they're moving all the Westworld stuff out and the Deadwood stuff back in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they have to bring in all that dirt and all that water.
Yeah.
Because they have to make all that mud.
All that paste and mud and slime. Oh, AMC's The Sun is going to be back soon. Season 2 is in the can, and they say it's going to be airing in 2018, but they haven't announced a premiere date yet. And for those of you who like their Cowboys real, Season 4 of INSP's The Cowboy Way premieres on Sunday night, August 26th. I think they just didn't the last season just end like Tuesday?
I don't know. I don't watch it, so. I know. What can I say?
I feel like waltzing Happy Trails. Hey, listen, Henry, though, you talking about Costner, an American classic, Bobby reminded me while we were off air that you had the good fortune of doing a feature with Wes Studi recently. Is that correct?
Oh, I sure did. It's the current cover story on True West magazine. And
is he as interesting as he seems?
Yes, he absolutely is. He's also very funny. He's a very witty guy, and although his humor sort of comes out of left field, but just terribly bright, terribly talented. And, tremendous interview. Wonderful guy to talk with. Probably my favorite interview since Robert Duvall.
I heard an interview with Studi in which he was asked, how did you decide to become an actor? And he said, I couldn't do anything else. I think of that sometimes. I was asked earlier by the hosts, tell us about, writing. Well, because I'm not good at anything. I think I can write a bit about being bad at stuff.
Hey, Henry, interesting thing about Woody Harrelson being in the Texas Ranger movie about Barney and Clyde, his history, mm-hmm. right? His father? His father...
Well, I'm sorry, what about his father?
His father was a killer who spent most
that's
of
right.
his life in Texas prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was fascinating. It goes back a long way in Woody's early life. But I was going to ask you if you got an update on Forsaken Westerns.
No, I am working on that, but I don't have anything to report yet. But
okay,
I will.
No worries. Just curious.
And I'm really glad you suggested that.
Well, so is he. But now he's disappointed.
No, I'm not disappointed. I just have to wait a few weeks.
Well, look how long it took me with Wes Studi.
Well, that's true.
To get there.
I mean, we started with Richard Polinelli. We're now into Bob Brill.
Well, I watched an episode of it the other day, and a 15-year-old gymnast who was an Olympic medalist for the U.S. in the 50s was actually in a pilot that kind of didn't go anywhere, and it was called El Coyote. And it was like, there was so much stuff out there that didn't make it that was probably pretty bad. No, it wasn't probably pretty. It was pretty, was bad that they've got a handle on. I was just curious. But anyway, I'll wait. But that's okay. I'll wait.
Well, you're going to have to.
We'll get there. You know, I always thought the old Zane Grey Theater was such a smart way to go, where they did it as an anthology show, uh-huh. but they spun like 7 different series off of that. You really got to see how it worked. Right. And, whether it would play, because The Rebel came out of there, The Rifleman, Trackdown, several others.
Trackdown. It was Robert Culp. Trackdown.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah. We're running out of time, Henry.
He's supposed to be a Texas Ranger. Okay. I'm done.
Oh.
You can read all about it at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thanks, pal. See you. Talk to you next month.
I look forward to it.
Be good. Stay out of trouble. Bye.
Cheers, Henry.
And Tony, we are out of time, so we're going to need to get all your info.
Well, let's see. I'm Tony Phillips. I'm a Capricorn, and
so am I. What date? What date?
January 11th.
Oh, see, I'm December 29th. Jerry's January 19th.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
My wife is January the 5th, which means 6 days each year. She's a year older than me, and that's a glorious
week. The phones are lighting up with people wanting to get in on their birthdays.
Yeah, I know. Huh? It's birthday time now. Anyway, your email, your website, all that good stuff, Tony, if you wouldn't mind.
I'm at tony-phillips.com. That's the easiest way.
Okay.
Talking about the Fires of Orc, Google the Fires of Orc. You'll see it. It'll pop up right after one reference to a Blake poem. And you can find me on Facebook. I'm T. Phillips SD, which stands for San Diego, which I'm proud to call home. Same handle, T. Phillips SD on Twitter. And I look forward to hearing from anybody. I welcome hate mail, criticism, any kind of caustic observation. Yeah. I don't
care what you say, as long as you say something.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Tony. And you did wonders getting down to 15. I got to tell you.
I wish you all the very best. I look forward to being back on.
And you, you and I are going to do some talking this weekend or next week.
Let's do it, Jim. Let's get together.
You got it, man. In fact, I may come down there and have lunch with you. How's that?
If you fly, I'll buy. How's that?
Well, I'm not going to fly. I'll drive. If I drive, will you thrive? No. I'm okay.
Yeah. Pick your own ride.
All right, we'll talk.
I see a trip across the border coming.
Thanks, Tony. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, Tony Phillips, and his book is Fires of Orc. And I didn't get a chance to read it, because I really kind of wish I had now. But, hey, it is what it is. Okay, Bob, I didn't know you were such a smart guy.
Well, you know, it's sometimes
you hide it well
that way. Yeah, I know. it's my total humility.
That's exactly what it is. Bobby Jean.
Yes.
Always a pleasure having you with us.
I look forward to it.
Good. And next week we have Jenna Green. And I think I looked her up just before the show, and I forgot what she wrote. But she's got like 3 or 4 books. So. I'm sorry?
We'll be ready.
And she is another Creative Edge writer. So she's, Mickey's coming through. He's the man. And with that being said, go to Amazon and buy The Last Lonely Trail by Richard Polinelli and Jim Christina. It's a good book. And, of course, Bob's books, The Lantra series, and we have The Hunter series, and we've got all kinds of stuff going on.
Jonah Blue,
good book, good book.
Bugles of the Dust.
I just sent a copy of that, and you'll like to know this, Bobby. Still Waters and Jonah Blue went to Susan DePass Productions.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, so wow. I got fingers crossed to see if that's going to go anywhere. Mm. Okay, with that being said, it's another Thursday. We pretty much just shot in the butt, and of course, Bobby and Tony were having a private conversation on the air while we were trying to figure out things,
which we all heard, by the way.
Yeah, we all heard it. And okay. I'm sure the audience heard it, but that's okay. You guys weren't dirty. That's good.
No.
All right, Bobby, we'll talk to you next week. Bob, be good. Stay out of trouble. And for Bob Brill, Jerry, Christina, myself, and Bobby Jean Bell, we, of course, are out of here.